Hello, and welcome to the Cisco Data Center podcast series. My name is Robert Aldrich, and it is my pleasure to be your host today. I function as Cisco's Technology Partner Manager for Data Center and our Enterprise Marketing Group. Joining me today is Vic Peltz of IBM and Mark Allen, who is with our Storage Switching Business Unit. Welcome, gents.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is our sixth episode in the series, and we are very happy to be hosting IBM today. IBM's global services is Cisco's top integration partner worldwide, and our strategic alliance goes back to 1999. Many in the industry look to the IBM and Cisco partnership model as the benchmark of a successful strategic relationship. And IBM will be here today to discuss the jointly developed solution for continuous availability of their AIX, or CAA for short. Now, Vic, you're a technical marketing consultant in IBM's System and Technology Group based here in San Jose, and you've been with IBM since 1975 with a large portion of your career spent in the field. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct, Rob. And over the years, I've been involved in most major industries one way or the other.
Great. We really appreciate you lending us your time and insight for this episode today. And Mark joining us today, who is a storage technical leader in Cisco's Data Center Switching and Security Technology Group. Mark, glad you could join us as well.
Well, thanks for having us here today, Rob.
Great. Now, you and Vic were both heavily involved in the development of the solution we're discussing today, so our intention was to really just give the listeners a high-level overview of the main points of the CAA solution and then point them in the right direction to learn more at the end of our discussion. So maybe to start that off, we could go through some of the challenges that the CAA solution was developed to address, as we all understand the importance our customers place on having a sound business continuity plan. So to that end, and as a level set, Vic, how does IBM define business continuity, and what are you seeing as the main drivers behind our customers implementing a strategy to support it?
Well, thank you, Rob. First of all, let me say that the way we look at a business disaster recovery plan is that it entails, of course, the IT aspects, but it entails much more than that. First of all, people. You have to make sure that you have a plan that encompasses the reality that maybe some of your key people will not be available. Communications is another aspect where you may find that you have some of your communications infrastructure has been destroyed one way or another. You have to take that into account. And there are many other aspects of the plan as well. The key message here is that it's not just IT, that you, in fact, have to work right across the entire business and involve the various line of business executives when building your business disaster recovery plan.
Great. That's a solid foundation. So how does that relate specifically to the customer's challenges?
Well, first of all, let me define for you what we consider to be the elements of an IT plan for business continuity. There are three aspects to it. The first is what we call high availability, and this is where you will build a fault-tolerant, failure-resistant IT infrastructure that will support your critical applications on a continuous or near-continuous basis. Second of all is the aspect of continuous operations. Continuous operations recognizes that you have to be able to do the normal day-to-day things like backups and systems maintenance
right.
in a way that is non-disruptive so that you can, in fact, continue the availability of the business applications while you're doing these things. And third is disaster recovery. That almost doesn't need an explanation.
We're all familiar with that. Yep.
So those really are the three aspects of it. Now, in terms of the challenges and the drivers, a number of factors come into it. First of all, risk reduction. We need to be able to have a business continuity plan that reduces the risk that were a disaster to occur, either a local disaster or a regional disaster, that we can, in fact, continue the business and move forward. Another aspect that's driving business continuity these days are new regulatory requirements and audit requirements.
Right.
Anybody that's ever dealt with an internal auditor will appreciate the fact that you need to have a plan that you can show is repeatable and reliable and, in fact, executable consistently. To that end, as the data center workload grows over time, the solutions must be scalable.
Right.
It doesn't do any good to put something in place, which is a point solution today, and you find that 3 years from now, it just doesn't scale. And then lastly, we take into account the reality that all of this has to be done in an affordable way, and the testing has to be affordable. So you have to be able to test the plan regularly, but you have to be able to do it in an affordable fashion.
Right.
These are really the main aspects and elements that we see in a business continuity plan.
That's a great run-through, and it sounds like, you know, investment protection has been thought about early on in how the solution's been pulled together.
Absolutely.
So in that overview of the pillars of a successful business continuance strategy, one of the things I wanted to help the listeners with today was allowing you to add some of your firsthand insight. I noticed in reading that your bio that you've actually had some firsthand experience with actual disasters. Could you maybe share some of the key insights that you've picked up in your time?
Certainly. Let me run through really sort of five very common mistakes that are made in disaster recovery planning and some suggestions on how to avoid them. First of all, there is often a mismatch between the business requirements and the IT recovery planning. In other words, the IT organization goes off and builds a plan, but they do not consult the various key lines of business. And so it's very important to do that. You have to make sure that the time that you are allowing to recover, for example, is consistent with what the business can tolerate. If you have a key OLTEP application that cannot afford to be down for more than 30 minutes, don't build a plan that takes you 2 hours to recover.
Right.
Second of all, thoroughly executing, exercising the plan and maintaining it at the appropriate level of detail. pardon me. Very often what happens is a plan is built, people are happy with it, it's put in a drawer, and people forget about it. When it comes time to actually execute the plan, they find that documentation may be missing, or they find that over time, because they have not linked their plan to their change management and problem management processes, that in fact the plan doesn't really match the reality of what the infrastructure is at that time. Thirdly, plans did not effectively address the impact of a regional emergency. It's very easy to tacitly assume all kinds of infrastructure. I mentioned earlier communications, for example, transportation, people. All of these things may not be available, or they may not be available in as complete a way as you would assume. So you have to, in fact, assume or take into account some of these things and assume a regional emergency when you're doing your planning. Closely tied to that is, of course, the dependency on key personnel. Reality, again, is that some of your key people, for various reasons, may not be available. And so the plan has to take that into account and ensure that everything is sufficiently documented such that you don't have to rely on what's in someone's head.
Right.
And then lastly, fifth, is internal and external communication. It's very important that both employees and the public at large are aware that things are under control. Internal employees, for the obvious reason that they are going to have to know where to go to help recover the business. And externally, for example, a bank, you want to be able to reassure people that their deposits are safe, that they that you haven't been hacked or whatever the case may be. And so it's very important to have a good, clear communication plan.
That's a really thorough run through, Vic, and really I think our listeners can benefit a lot from your real world experience there. So maybe to switch gears, we could take a moment to discuss how the solution fits into the overall spectrum of business continuity solutions.
Sure. We define what we refer to as seven tiers. These tiers were actually defined some years ago by ShareGuide.
Mm-hmm.
And they relate both to the time that it would take to execute a recovery and the value and or costs involved in that particular solution. So it recognizes that nothing comes for free. Some of these solutions become higher cost, but there is also associated greater value. And so what one does is you match the application to the recovery time required and the cost, and you choose the recovery technique accordingly. This reinforces what the point I was making a few minutes ago, that you have to tie the recovery plan right back to the lines of business. Now, the tiers, at the simplest level, you have tier one, which is the traditional restoring critical data or applications from tape. Moving up the tiered slope, you could go to tier two, where you could have a hot site, for example, and you would restore from tape. Up to tier five, where we would do software replication. This could very well be IBM's DB2 or Oracle's database, actually being involved in replicating data and doing the transaction recovery, right up to tier six and to tier seven, where tier six is storage mirroring, possibly with or without automation, possibly over metro distances or possibly global distances, and then tier seven, which is general site mirroring, full automated recovery, again, over possibly metro distances or global distances, and CAA, to position it, fits in as a tier seven solution.
Great. So it sounds like it's really been baked together, and it's a tangible solution that the customer can take advantage of today.
Very much so.
That's great. So Mark, we've been talking a lot over on this end, but we're hoping maybe you could chime in and give us kind of a run through of what the main components are that make this solution up, as well as the issues that one should be aware of in potentially implementing it for multiple sites.
Certainly, Rob. Before I really get into the components of our solution, I really want to spend a moment here just talk about some of the technical and operational challenges that customers face today when deploying a business continuity solution.
Great. Okay.
The first is, the application availability, and with that, server clusters. More and more businesses are deploying clusters, server clusters, to provide high availability, to have the ability to fail over from one cluster component to another. And this can be done within a data center or across two data centers. But there are challenges when you're doing cluster failovers. There's issues with disk volume management, which disk volumes are being mounted at which server at what time, and control of journal disk for overall control of the cluster. There's challenges in detecting cluster failures. What constitutes a failure for the cluster? What's your triggering mechanism? And there's problems with what we call the split brain function.
Right.
What happens if, the communication between two clusters is broken? How do you avoid two clusters becoming active simultaneously? And then there's the day-to-day management of the cluster itself. How do you deploy a cluster solution that's easy to deploy and manage in both day-to-day operations and during times of failure, which is a very important aspect of it.
Right.
On top of that, there's challenges with the data volume replication. Replication itself is pretty well understood. It's a mature technology, but it's the managing of these volumes and the managing of the data replication during a failure that can be a bit cumbersome. Normally, these are manual operations, and these will be subject to human failure. And, this especially is highlighted during times of high stress and a major outage.
Right.
And then lastly, there's the challenge of how do you actually replicate the data? What media are you going to use? Traditional native fiber channel solutions are well understood, but not all customers have access to dark fiber and the overlaying native fiber channel solutions. Mm-hmm. IP networks, on the other hand, are very prevalent, but are not normally thought of for synchronous replication. And there's concerns of data security when traversing an IP network that need to be addressed.
Great. So it sounds like in terms of deployment, we really need to consider three main buckets, if you will, the cluster management, the volume replication, and lastly, security. So what about the components that actually make the solution up?
Okay. When we developed our joint solution with IBM, we really built it upon three main components. The first piece are the IBM P-Series servers running IBM's high-availability cluster multiprocessing extended distance for AIX software. Kind of a long, drawn-out title there.
Wow, that's a mouthful.
Yeah, we refer to it as HACMP-XD.
Okay.
The second piece of this is the IBM Total Storage DS8000 and DS6000 arrays with the Metro Mirror disk replication. And the last part of this is the Cisco MDS9000 family of fiber channel switches and directors with integrated FCIP SAN extension. Each of these components is an integral piece required to build an integrated business continuity solution. So let's look at them a little bit deeper. The IBM P-Series servers running HAC and PXD are providing us the extended clustering support required to maintain business continuity within a data center and between data centers.
Correct.
The basic HACMP functionality provides both high availability and cluster management for servers and applications. HACMP provides the management and the monitoring clusters and the management of disk resources. And with the addition of the XD extension, is the management of disk mirroring between data centers. HACMP-XD is managing both the local and remote mirrored volumes, including mounting of volumes and the data replication direction. For example, if we're doing a planned outage, we could actually move operations from one data center to another data center, and HACMP-XD will actually manage the mirroring direction, so now we're replicating from the remote data center back to our primary data center.
Right.
So this gives the ability to build a highly automated and highly available server environment across two data centers. To provide the actual data protection through replication, we're using the IBM DS8000 and 6000 arrays with the Metro Mirror replication. The Metro Mirror replication software allows users to replicate data between data centers, so in case of failure, the operations can continue at that remote data center. The Metro Mirror software provides synchronous replication and is optimized for long-distance replication by eliminating the extra round trips required during normal data write sequences. And, of course, to replicate this data, we're going to need the SAN extension network, and that's where Cisco's MDS family of products completes the solution.
Now, the MDS, this is my favorite switch, I think, and most of our listeners are probably aware of it, but as the marketing guy in the room, I'd be remiss if I didn't point out the fact that Gartner, a leading analyst, recently took us from Challenger to their Magic Quadrant where MDS is concerned. So I thought I'd point that out. So enough, Mark, and let's get back to the technical, Mark.
Okay. The Cisco MDS family provides a director-class SAN fabric for high availability with integrated SAN extension features. And these features are optimized for the network, for storage, and for secure data replication. The TCP stack and our FCIP solution for the MDS has been optimized to support storage traffic. It's been designed to handle the burstiness of storage traffic, which is different from normal TCP applications. We also have a hardware-based compression solution, which provides us the ability to optimize bandwidth up to gigabit Ethernet speeds between data centers. And this helps reduce the OPEX costs of businesses by reducing the size of the data circuits between data centers or perhaps eliminating the need for secondary circuits. Additionally, we have hardware-based encryption, and this provides the data security and integrity of the data by encrypting the data across the IP network.
So that's great. So we've had a good run-through on what the main business drivers are, what the functional requirements are, and really what some of the technical components. So maybe at this point, I could open up to both of you, and Vic, we'll start with you. What do you see as some of the main technical pitfalls our audience needs to be aware of when considering the solution?
Okay, Rob, well, thank you. Yes, first of all, telecommunications costs. There is going to be a trade-off between bandwidth, latency, and distance. And we have found in our experience that 50% to 70% of the total cost of ownership of a remote solution is embodied in telecommunications costs over a period of about 3 years. Second of all, latency versus bandwidth. The point was made a few minutes ago about the number of round trips required to execute a particular write. And with the DS 6000, 8000, it's possible to, in fact, have one round trip to do that. And that will have a direct influence then over the effective latency that one can achieve. And then thirdly, make sure that there is compatible and sufficient hardware at the recovery site, because this is where you might end up running your business. It doesn't make any sense to put in insufficient hardware and then not be able to run your critical applications.
Right. Great. So Mark, anything to add to that?
Certainly, Rob. What generally happens is that with any solution, there are some limitations that users need to be aware of. One of the important ones is the bandwidth requirement between the data centers. We can reduce some bandwidth requirements through compression, but obviously we still have to have sufficient bandwidth with or without compression to handle all the data.
Right.
So it's really important for customers to understand what their data rates are going to be between the data centers when they're doing replication. We've talked about latency quite a bit because it does have an impact both on application performance and replication performance. By limiting the round trip, we can actually increase the distance between data centers, which gives us a greater threat protection for the replication and the business continuity solution. But we do have to be cognizant of the fact that at some point, either the application or the user experience will be impacted negatively by the increased distances.
Got it. Great. So that's a good run through. So let's take a second and summarize really what problems we've addressed with the CA solution today. So first, automation facilitates repeatable, affordable, and auditable testing to ensure the installation's disaster plan is current and workable. Also pointed out earlier that that testing with IBM is affordable and something they certainly looked at in coming together with a solution. So by enabling an installation to fail over to a backup system quickly, the CAA solution can help achieve the required level of availability demanded by the business. So these are the challenges the solution addresses today. And Mark, maybe you could tell us what might be coming next from IBM and Cisco.
Certainly, Rob. First, I want to touch on what we've actually tested today, and that's been tested with gigabit Ethernet solutions. So we're running FCIP over gigabit Ethernet network, and we're doing synchronous replication to distances of about 240 kilometers. In the future, in the coming phases of this project, we'll be looking at different network speeds, probably OC12 first, and maybe even down to OC3 speeds,
wow,
and looking at longer distances and determine how far we can extend this solution and how far it will actually scale.
Great, great. So listeners, stay posted. We'll be getting back to you with some later revisions on this. So you've heard from two industry leaders today that have collaborated on a joint solution to help ensure business continuity for its mutual customers. Gentlemen, the last point we want to touch on are what are the key differentiators of the CAA solution over other solutions in the market today? And Vic, can we start with you?
Certainly. Thank you, Rob. Really, I see the key differentiator of being the joint center of competency that Cisco and IBM have established. It certainly would be possible for a customer to go and buy these components as piece parts and then try and implement it and put it together with all of the usual pitfalls and problems and expense that would entail. What we have with the Center of Competency is a core team of solution architects that really maintain a solution testing environment and will publish their results. And so a customer then has the ability, the benefit, if you will, rather, of this knowledge transfer and will be assured that the most current interoperability information and configurations are available on a worldwide basis. This, to me, then, is the key benefit, that by availing themselves of the IBM Cisco Center of Competency, they'll be able to install the solution in a timely and affordable fashion on budget as part of a larger project.
So that's great. So it really gives the potential customer the opportunity to really try before they buy.
Absolutely. It does that as well.
That's great.
And it's a solution that, in fact, has been tested thoroughly.
Great, great. And Mark, what's your take on it?
Okay. I looked at it from a technical standpoint here, and I think there are several unique differentiators to the solution. First of all, HACMP is unique in its implementation in that it really allows for truly integrated cluster and disk management. By adding the management of the DS6000 and 8000 Metro Mirror replication, we've really completed a complete package of business continuity from a server and storage perspective. The optimization of Metromir for long-distance support is another key differentiator of this solution. And lastly, from the Cisco MDS 9000 perspective, the ability to have an integrated SAN extension solution provide higher availability and the ability to leverage this platform for multiple solutions, not just a data replication solution. By using the use of different vSANs, we can be running simultaneously open system solutions. Mm-hmm. We could be running mainframe FICON solutions and our replication solutions on the same physical network. And this overall is going to reduce the CapEx and OpEx expenses for customers.
Saving money is always good.
Yep. And lastly, I want to go back and reiterate the partnership between Cisco and IBM as a key differentiator. To have both these companies come together and develop this and test the solution, the key being the test, it really gives our customers the knowledge they can successfully implement this solution today.
Great. Guys, really appreciate your time and your run-through. To our listeners out there, if you'd like to learn more about the solution you've heard about today or the partnership between IBM and Cisco, please visit www.ciscoibmallinword.com, where we'll also be posting a white paper on the solution a little bit later this summer. If you'd like to hear additional episodes of the Data Center podcast series from Cisco, you could also visit www.cisco.com/go/data center. Or as a third option, you can always contact your IBM business partner or sales representative. Thank you for joining us, everyone. Until next time, happy operations.